Welcome to The Bridge, a podcast from the Division of Diversity and Community Engagement at the University of Texas at Austin, where we share stories and best practices from UT instructors who connect on-campus learning and research with real-world community projects. I'm Natasha Daniels. I'm a graduate research assistant with the Center for Community Engagement and a doctoral student in the Ed Policy and Planning Program. I'm also the Chief Systems Navigator with Round Rock Black Parents Association, a parent of three amazing young people, and a former educator of 15 years.
And I'm Valerie Lainberger, also a graduate research assistant with the Center for Community Engagement and a doctoral student in the Education Policy and Planning Program. In this episode, Natasha and I will discuss community-engaged graduate research, focusing on how Natasha's work in the community with Round Rock Black Parents Association informs her research and her doctoral work at UT's College of Education. I would love to know more about what brought you to study education policy at the University of Texas.
I was an educator for 15 years. I taught special education, science. I was an administrator. So it's K through 12. I've been in the public education system for 15 years. I loved my job and I loved the students that I taught. Like, that's the heart of, I think, any educator are the kids. But the bureaucracy was super intense. And I experienced some extreme racial violence at the hands of a system that was honestly built to push me out as a Black educator. I think when we look at the history of integration, Black teachers are underrepresented because integration centered white comfort. And when Black students went into white schools, they did not hire Black teachers. So I think this has been like a longstanding historical piece that has led to why I exited public education, why I'm seeking answers in a policy program. I have three children, and two of which receive special education services. I just recognized the system is flawed from the top, and I felt like I need to understand it inside and out so that I can attempt to create something outside of it. Or not I, but we. Because I feel like I never do anything alone. It's all about community, but we need to be able to create something outside of what currently exists.
I think that historical context is so important. And I'm so glad you brought it back to integration and how we are still seeing the legacy of Brown versus Board play out today. And I think that most people think about that as only positive Supreme Court ruling. But as you mentioned, of course, there were lots of other, you know, consequences that were negative, especially for Black educators. So I appreciate you sharing that. I'd love to know a little bit more about your work with Round Rock Black Parents. I have seen coverage in national news outlets, which is really exciting to have a parent organization, especially a Black parent organization from the local Austin area, receiving such attention. So I'd love to know a little bit more about the work of Round Rock Black Parents and how that relates to your research.
Round Rock Black Parents was born of pain. It began in 2015 when a Black student was chokeslammed by a police officer, and it was caught on camera. You can see it on YouTube. It was all over the news. There was a white student who had taken something from the Black student and he was trying to get it back. And the police officer chokeslammed the Black student and had his knee in his back. And Black parents marched up to central office to a board meeting. And they were like, we demand accountability for this. You can't do this. He's 14 years old. And long story short, the district basically said the officer had done nothing wrong. But the incident galvanized a community that had basically been silent. Like, we had just been letting these things happen. And when something so egregious happens, you open your eyes and see what's going on. And that one organizing effort led to what is now Round Rock Black Parents Association. And we have been, unfortunately, I hate using the word fight, but that's what it is. Like, we've been fighting to ensure that our kids get an education ever since. But it's more than just the fight. I think Round Rock Black Parents is such a beautiful space because Black families and parents of Black children are uplifted. We have check-ins. We had a Black Joy barbecue not so long ago. And you mentioned like the national work.
Yeah. I mean, Natasha, you were on Rachel Maddow. Like, being on Rachel Maddow is such a big deal.
Oh, my God. I was so nervous for Rachel Maddow. But yeah, we've been on MSNBC, NBC News. Austin Woman featured us in their April, they're like this month magazine. But most of the work that they have discussed on the national outlets have been around book bans and how we fought a book ban in Round Rock ISD. But I think Round Rock Black Parents is so much bigger than that book ban. And that's the message we keep trying to communicate, is that these book bans are a symptom of something so much larger. Like when we talk about, especially like being in ed policy, we talk about the push for privatization and how, like, in either system, the system that currently exists or the privatization that they're pushing for, Black students are still going to suffer. Our positions in public education are so precarious, and it's kind of like you're waiting for the other shoe to drop. When is my kid going to be the one that's on TV? And even if you look at the discipline data in Round Rock ISD, a Black student is 4 times more likely to go to the DAP for discretionary placement. And the DAP is the alternative education. We call it the Round Rock Opportunity Center. But what's so alarming is that discretionary placement means this wasn't for a fight. This wasn't for bringing a gun. This wasn't for a knife. These are discretionary placements where an administrator said, you're misbehaving, you're going to the alternative school. The alternative school has traditionally been highly Black and brown, and it's basically a place where, being in that system, I've seen teachers say it's time for them to go to the Rock, because rather than them change their teaching practices, they're like, oh, we'll just get him out of my class. And that's where that disproportionality is being seen.
How does the work of Round Rock Black Parents connect to your research?
When I came in, I really wanted to study Black parents' PTAs, because I was like, well, PTA doesn't really serve us. We really need to look at how we can organize nationally. But getting here and like really being in the thick of it and doing the work in the community and doing the research, I've realized that it's so much bigger than that. And I think also something that people don't realize is that Black parents in the United States are not new to organizing. I think the dominant narrative is that Black parents are not involved, but they've been resisting since the 1800s with emancipation. In 1896, the community group of Black mothers founded the National Association of Colored Women, which grew to 250,000 members by 1927. And this was in response to what is now the National PTA, because the National PTA was like, oh, we'll include anyone, which was a bold stance to take at the time, but it was only on paper, right? It was very performative, and the PTA was not serving the needs of Black students. So by the turn of the 20th century, the U.S. saw a rise in Black parent associations through the National Congress of Colored Parents and Teachers. So now I'm really focusing on how parents are responding to these incidents at school, what activism looks like through service models, and how Black parents are shifting policies and practices. I think going into my classes, my objective is a little different, because anytime I read an article or anytime I've given an assignment, I think, how is this going to push my people forward? And how is this going to inch us closer to liberation? And when I write a paper, I don't write to turn it in for an assignment. I write for a community. I write in a way that I can say, I can deliver this to Black parents and they can be like, oh, I didn't know that. Like, so I think that my community work is the entire impetus for my research. My kids are the impetus for my research. And I think there's so much tension between academic work and praxis. I think about some of the things that we read in our classes and how, like, some of the suggestions that are given, you can tell have come from someone that has never organized anything, probably never taught it at school. And it's a little, yeah. It's a little, right? It's a little concerning, yeah. Because I think as academics, we have a duty to make sure that we are in these spaces and we are not just writing from a exploitative space. I think it goes back to the question that we had in epistemologies of who should do the research. And while I don't think there's a right or wrong answer, mm-hmm. here, I think we have to be critical about how we are approaching the work, how we are entering spaces, and how we are connecting with the people in the community. Like, how are you talking to them? And are they participating? Because I'm a huge fan of participatory research that I've been reading. And while I haven't done any, I think these are all questions that we need to keep at the forefront.
I went to a conference in October, and it was the Critical Race Studies in Education Conference. And they had a whole panel that was a specific project that was going on in Wilmington, Delaware. And basically, they called it street PAR, or street participatory action research. And the research project was created by people from the community, and professors from the University of Delaware actually helped facilitate the research project. But it was really actually led by the community. And when the professors and community members who were part of the project were speaking in this panel, they talked about how this effort was specifically to combat scientific colonialism, that so many times they're interested in studying an issue and they come to a community that they don't belong in or that they don't belong to. And they study the community from the outside and they don't really have a true perspective of the issues that are there. Instead of in this project, it was completely reversed because it was led by community members. And I think, like you said, it is this question for me as a white researcher who is interested in issues of race. I'm grappling with that of where is the line and what is my responsibility to step back when it's not my place to do research in certain areas, but at the same time, how can I leverage my privilege and positionality in order to be able to conduct research and to be able to lift some of these issues? I'm so excited to see where your research goes, because I think that there are so many really rich, amazing things that you could do in the community, but then also would have such a wide-ranging impact outside of Round Rock, outside of Austin, outside of Texas. Do you have any current research projects or ideas that you're currently working on? Or what are the projects that you're really excited about conducting research?
So shameless plug here for Mallory and I, the symposium this fall.
Yes.
We are planning the CBL symposium, which is centering intersectionality this year. And I'm super excited because I feel like this is an opportunity to center community. When we talk about bringing faculty together and them going in and doing community research, like connecting with community, so often it's like research on and not research with, or it can have like a white saviorism mentality. And I feel like bringing the community into our symposium and decentering the ivory tower, we'll get back to the root of why we're here as academics. Like, we're all here to make some sort of change. Like, otherwise we wouldn't be here. That's something I'm excited about. There's several projects that we're working on within Round Rock by Black Parents. There are several organizations that we are connecting with, and we're just building networks that will lead us to a national platform, which is exciting. I think, Mallory, you and I are working on, I don't want to say it out loud because I know it's like at the beginning stages, but we're working with a senator on some holistic policy, which is super exciting because we're on the ground floor of something that has the potential to really benefit families, and more specifically families of color, because I think they're often left out of the equation, especially in public schools. In the state of Texas, only 26% of students identify as white. So when you think about the policy, right, when you think about the policies that we are crafting, who are we crafting them for and who is crafting them? I think it's really exciting to have a voice in a public school system that is now majority us in Texas. Like, it is people of color.
Yeah, 100%. That is something for my own research that I'm actually looking at in the last legislative session, is whose voices were prioritized, whose voices were missing, whose voices were silenced in the policymaking process, especially around the censorship in schools. And it's really infuriating to think about how, like, the majority of students in the state of Texas are students of color, and the people who are making decisions about their education don't they represent them technically, but they don't represent them. And right. it's mainly older white men in the legislature in these spaces who are making these decisions and don't understand the consequences, mm-hmm. both intended and unintended, of the decisions that they're making and how harmful it is, not only for students of color, but I argue also for white students, because white students also need to understand, they need to be exposed to things that are not just white experiences. And I think that you hit the nail right on the head there, that this work is so important so that we can make sure that the students in our state are actually seeing themselves in curriculum and feeling like their lived experiences are recognized and affirmed, not just there, but affirmed. So we've been talking a lot about our interest as graduate researchers. How do you feel that the university might be able to better support graduate students who are interested in community-based research?
When you look, and I probably should have pulled up the demographics of UT, but when you enter into community, I think, number one, we have to be ready for that, and that means doing our own work. So I think the university could center conversations around systemic racism and anti-Black racism specifically, because I think that's like the root of everything. But I think, and ableism, I think we need to center all these conversations in our classes. I think as professors, like, our professors have to do the unlearning, right? And check their own bias, their own, like, ableize language and internalize racial oppression. There's so much to do there before you can go enter into a community so that you can understand where you're going. And then secondly, I think we do a great job with connecting through GivePulse.
Yeah.
Do you want to speak mm-hmm. about GivePulse real quick?
Sure. So GivePulse is actually like an online platform that our center, the Center for Community Engagement, runs, but it's open to anybody, students, faculty, staff at UT, to track their service. And it's, the overall program is Volunteer UT. And there's over 200 community organizations that post opportunities for students and faculty and staff, and volunteer opportunities for them to come and work with community organizations. And so there's a lot of opportunity. There's a lot of opportunity to connect there using that platform. So there's these kind of like formal relationships, I think you're getting at, that there's these formal kind of ways and relationships that exist that the university is connecting to the community service and community engagement. But I think we can both agree, like, there's always room for more. Always yes. room for more.
I think that so often we tend to gravitate to larger organizations that are super visible, like Austin Pets Alive or Austin Justice Coalition, because they're huge names in our community. And I'm not discounting that, like, they need all the support they can get, but there are also smaller organizations doing the work of improving lives and I think could really benefit from a partnership with the university and students. And some of the orgs out here are Educators in Solidarity Act, formerly Undoing Racism Round Rack, Undoing White Supremacy Austin, Hutto Black Families, and Black Pflugerville. Especially when we look at how Austin is gentrifying, it's important to pull in the suburban areas, Manor, like the people are having to go because it is super unaffordable at this point. Like, doing the work to preserve and help those that are still here, that are still hanging on by a thread to stay in their homes in Austin.
Natasha, you mentioned Educators in Solidarity, which is a local anti-racist teacher organization. And that's actually how we met, even before we were in this doctoral program together. And as I'm thinking about it, we were active during session and did a lot of policy work, but I'm also thinking about the connection to UT and that you and I are in this program. There's a lot of graduates from the University of Texas that are leaders in Educators in Solidarity. And how do you see the university forming partnerships or making connections with groups like Educators in Solidarity?
It's important to really look at education policy as holistically as possible, because health policy is education policy. And this came from an article I read by Jean Anion, which really talks about how education policy cannot be considered alone, because there's so many things that impact education. including like housing, healthcare. I think in connecting with the university, we need more people with those experiences. We need more students who like this is their passion and really get to the root of how they can join us in our efforts to support Black and Brown-led organizations and to build our capacity as anti-racist educators and community members. So I think that's a huge opportunity there for the university to partner with them.
Yeah. And I think this really sums up our conversation. So is I think both of us, and there's a lot of us in the education policy space at UT, that we're here because we want to use academic research as a way to create change and disrupt systems that are oppressive. But I think that what you're saying is so important, that being grounded in community and being grounded in experiences of both of us having been educators and understanding kind of how these policies play out or could play out in real life, instead of just not having that experience and just assuming that even the policies with the best intentions, sometimes with during the implementation process, can do more harm than good. I think that you're right. And maybe there is space for UT to continue recruiting students who have these lived experiences, not only as educators, but have lived experience, a variety of different types of lived experiences, to bring all different kinds of voices into spaces to try and make these policies that are more inclusive, that are more equitable, that do represent the student population here in Texas. Yeah, this was such a lovely conversation, Natasha. It's always fun to talk to you. We have such a great time working together and going to school together. Is there anything else that you feel like you just want to say or that we've missed in this conversation?
I just want to thank you for even giving me the opportunity to speak, because so often I don't see myself as an expert. I'm just out here, honestly, as a Black mama trying to make our community better.
Yeah, in that space you are in. And I know that speaking for myself, and I think I can speak for anybody that has had a class with you, that knowledge coming into the classroom and making connections to real world situations and the community itself, like, is so invaluable and so important. I appreciate you. Thank you for taking the time and being so transparent and honest and open about your experiences, because they are so valuable and so important.
Thank you so much, Mallory.
Thanks for joining us for this conversation about community engagement and graduate research. Our next episodes will focus on intersectionality and community-engaged teaching, learning, and research, leading up to our community-based learning symposium this fall. Until then, keep up with the Center for Community Engagement on social media, at UT_CCE on Twitter and Instagram, at UTexasCCE on Facebook, or visit our website, diversity.utexas.edu/community-engagement.